Many in Eau Claire and the surrounding region have been hungry for a new and expanded arts and entertainment venue for years. And in 2012, this year, a public-private partnership was developed, and they put forth a plan. It's called the Eau Claire Confluence Project, and it would be located along the confluence of the Eau Claire and Chippewa Rivers near Phoenix Park downtown. It would be comprised of an arts and events facility with three theaters, the largest having 1,200 seats. Also, a second building would have space for student housing and commercial and retail space. Consensus for this project has been building quite a bit, and tonight we'll get an update from two of the big players in the Confluence Project, and a little later we'll hear from a critic of the project's planned demolition of some of the historic buildings in the downtown Eau Claire area. I'm Rich Kramer, and we're talking about the Eau Claire Confluence Project this hour on the West Side. I'd like now to welcome our guests to the program. First, I'll welcome Mike Rindo. Mike is the Assistant Chancellor for Facilities at UW-Eau Claire, also in charge of communications there. Mike Rindo, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Our pleasure. And I'd also like to welcome Dan Klumpner. And Dan is a partner with Commonweal Development, one of the major players in this project. Dan Klumpner, thank you for joining us as well.
Certainly.
I appreciate it. And I understand you're a little under the weather, and we thank you for fighting through it for us.
You're at your own peril.
I think I had what you had, or what you've got last week. Also, for people listening and people are interested in this project, please join in the conversation. Our number is 800-228-5615. That number again, 800-228-5615. Are you excited for what a new arts and events facility can do for downtown? Do you have any concerns? Is now the right time to be spending upwards of $88 million? Give us a call. Also, you can post a question or a comment on the West Side Facebook page. So first, as I mentioned in the little lead in there, there's been a long interest and many calls for this type of a facility. And we saw something, probably the most concrete plan we've seen in a while. And Mike Rindo, how long had this thing been cooking? And is there any one person or any one entity that can claim that it's their baby?
No, I think this is the child of many fathers and mothers coming together to try and make it happen. The genesis of this really goes back 5 years to the Clear Vision Eau Claire process. And that was a gathering of several hundred citizens who came together to do strategic planning around what the community would like its future to look like. And out of that discussion, there were six original key performance area groups. And three of those groups identified improved or new community events facilities for the Eau Claire area as a top priority. And so there was a committee that was formed after the original Clear Vision process to drill down a little bit and say, what does that really mean, community events facilities? It's pretty broad. Mm-hmm. And so there was a group that came together, and it was led by myself along with Ben Rich Gruber from the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council and Linda John from Visit Eau Claire. And we had representatives from the business community, the arts community, and governmental entities as well that worked on that committee. And we really set out to have a lot of one-on-one conversations with people in the community to say, all right, we've heard about these community events facilities, but what exactly do you mean by that? And what our findings were is that they really were looking for three things: a community art center, a major event center that would be able to host large events in the neighborhood of several thousand people above and beyond what we have currently, for example, at Zorn Arena at the university. And then the third thing was a conference or convention center. So with that information, we went forward and we had a couple of very well-attended public forums this past spring. And those public forums were actually broadcast live by Wisconsin mm-hmm. Public Radio and also streamed live by Volume 1. So not only did we have the participants in the room, but we had people in the community listening in. And we said, all right, we have these three things, the community arts center, the major events facility, and also a convention center. What is the highest priority? And as people talked through that, they said, you know, Eau Claire already has a very rich and vibrant arts culture. And we've got some people that are not only very successful locally, regionally, nationally, but also internationally. And we also have a need to replace some aging arts facilities, especially the State Theater, which is the primary home for the community. The state has a lot of deferred maintenance. It's built in 1926 as a vaudeville house. Mm-hmm. And so people said, if we're going to really focus on one thing here, let's start with the Arts Center, because we have the danger of losing something that we already have in the community. We don't have a major event center. We don't have a conference or convention center. But we do have the arts, and it's a really vital part of our community. So that's how the discussion really came forward publicly. There's more that I can talk about, but I could go on and on, and I know you got a lot of questions, so I'll stop there.
All right. Well, we may touch on some of those things. I'm interested in why, you know, the idea of a convention center, a multi-thousand seat kind of a facility, was put on the back burner. Why didn't we go in that direction? But Dan Klumpner, this might sound like a ridiculous question, but I have to ask it. Do we have a preferred groundbreaking date, or what's the time frame we're looking at here? What would you like to see? When would you like to see this thing go up?
Well, the ideal scenario would be to open the Community Arts Center in 2016 and potentially the residential facility a year earlier. They'd start at the same time, but the construction times vary a little bit. The 2016 is a special day or a special year in the life of the university, and that's a target. But there's an awful lot to happen and a lot of processes and a lot of people involved, and all we can do is take it a step at a time. But that's what we're pushing for, and we're cautiously optimistic we'll make that.
And kind of a philosophical question, Mike Rindo, can Eau Claire really think this big? I mean, this is a huge project, and is this the time, and is this the right mindset that we need to have?
Well, I think you said it very well earlier, that there's been discussions like this going on in our community for decades, and especially about how do we go about revitalizing the historic South Barstow district of the downtown. We've seen a lot of progress on the North Barstow side with the creation of Phoenix Park, the Farmers Market, the RCU corporate headquarters, the residential development, and the commercial development that's occurred there. But we really have not seen anything come together that has been able to be a catalyst for redevelopment of the South Barstow District. Is this a big project? Yes, it's a very big project. But because there are so many players involved and it's a collaborative project between the public and private sectors, we really think that this is the way to go forward, because no one entity would shoulder all of the burden for all of the project. There would be a lot of various entities that are working together and having contributions to the project in order to make it go forward. The other thing that on timing is, I alluded to the State Theater needing to have a lot of work done to it, but also the university has very serious needs when it comes to our performing arts facilities, especially CARE Theater, very limited in terms of what its capabilities are. And we don't have a larger venue on campus, for example, for the Artist Series, where we try and bring in world-class productions but can't really stage them. Zorn Arena is not a great venue for that. Mm-hmm. So we're really looking at that. We need to move forward on some facilities for the university. So it's a good time for us to have the discussion with the community to partner together to realize something that neither one of us, the community nor the university, could do alone.
And for those that may not know, why would 2016 be a special year for the university?
It's our centennial. It's the 100-year anniversary of UW-Eau Claire.
Okay. And as we alluded, we talked about the possibility of a convention center in there. I've only been in Eau Claire a couple of years, but one of the first weeks that I was here, I went to the laundromat, and I struck up a conversation with a fellow who was kind of griping about how Eau Claire doesn't have a big enough venue to get big-name national kind of acts. So why didn't we build, you know, or why aren't we planning on building a 5,000, 10,000 seat facility, Dan Klumpner?
First of all, I think there's a distinction between what the traditional convention center was and what a performing arts center is. And both of those business models are changing a little bit. In terms of this particular site, we're not only constrained by the site itself, but the total infrastructure downtown probably doesn't support as well a 5 to 10,000 square foot facility. The interesting thing is a couple of interesting things. One is that a lot of the convention business traditionally can now start to function in the kind of facility that we're going to have. People with drop-down screens and all of the technology today basically just need breakout rooms and then access to some good hotel rooms. So we've heard some of the experts say that as much as 30% of the typical or traditional convention business may be accommodated in the facility we have. We're designing this to be very flexible, very multi-purpose. So the hopes are that we will, in fact, generate some of that more traditional convention business.
And before we go to the calls, I want to ask, what happens to the State Theater? It needs some repair, and we get this brand-new, shiny facility with 1,200 seats and then some. Does the State Theater just get knocked down eventually or just kind of fall into ruin? Mike Rindo?
Well, let me just add one thing on the convention center question, and that is
sure.
The Clear Vision process said all of those are probably needed in the community. And so it's not – this project doesn't say that that wouldn't happen.
Okay.
We say that if we're successful with this, that may be the next thing that the community might be able to work together to realize. And, in fact, the university in its facilities master plan has both a shared university community arts center and a shared major event center that we would be very, very interested in teaming with the community to develop. And then I think Dan answered the question on conference and convention because that business is really changing. Now, in terms of the State Theater, ECRAC has really come to the conclusion that two things are possible here. If the Confluence project doesn't go through, then most likely they're going to have to put a lot of money into the State Theater, probably upwards of $10 million just to keep it going forward as a viable performing arts center. If the Confluence is constructed, the State would have to be repurposed in some way, but it would no longer be a primary venue for performing arts because there wouldn't be the need for it. And so, I know Ben Richgruber from the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council was invited to participate today and can't, but they're looking at a number of possibilities for that facility, which they own and are exploring what might happen to it. But it would no longer be, if this goes through it, a performing arts center.
And would this be a threat? I mean, this new facility with these venues, would this be a threat to the children's theater or the other theater, the other venues in town other than the State Theater? I mean, would this be competition, I guess, that would drive them out?
Well, Eau Claire Regional Arts Council will continue to be a major player in the Confluence Center. And Eau Claire Regional Arts Council really works directly with the Children's Theater, with the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, with the Eau Claire Symphony, the Jazz Orchestra. So they would continue to provide facilities to those groups as those groups need them. And you mentioned the large theater would be 1,200 seats. There'd also be a 450-seat theater and a 250-seat theater, which gives the groups many more options to be able to stage their various productions and concerts in the Confluence versus just the large State Theater, which is 1,100 seats. And oftentimes you don't need that many seats in order to stage some of those productions. So it actually gives the groups more opportunities to use a variety of venues.
All right. Well, we're going to take our first break here. We're talking about the Eau Claire Confluence Project. We've got a couple of the big players here in the studio. We are talking with Mike Rindo, Assistant Chancellor of Facilities for UW-Eau Claire, and Dan Klumpner, partner with Commonweal Development. We're going to hear from Patrick Kurtenbach a little bit later. He's with the Eau Claire Historical Preservation Foundation, and his group has some concerns about some of the buildings that might need to come down in order for this project to go up. This is The West Side. We'll be right back. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We're having a bit of technical issues, so we appreciate your patience. But we're talking about the Eau Claire Confluence Project this hour, and we've got some of the major players in the studio here. We're talking with Dan Klumpner. He's a partner with Commonweal Development, one of the firms that are involved in drawing up the plans and putting forth the efforts. Also, we've got Mike Rindo, Assistant Chancellor of Facilities for UW-Eau Claire, which is another major player in this. A little later, we'll hear from Patrick Kurtenbach of the Eau Claire Historical Preservation Foundation. But now we want to hear from our listeners. We're going to go to the phones. And first is a question from Penny in Eau Claire. And Penny has a question about parking. You're on the air, Penny. Thanks for staying with us.
Well, I'm going to talk about the parking, the public parking garage.
Okay.
And my question is related to that then. We know that they're saying that the public parking garage is not for the dormitory. And since most of the performances at the theater will be in the evening, I'm just really concerned why the patrons of the arts, who would not be staying in the dormitory, but they would be using the theater, so why would you guys build, or why would we be asked to build, I guess it's the city that's asked to build and maintain that public parking garage, under the dormitory? It just doesn't make any sense. And why wouldn't it go under the fine arts building?
All right, thank you for that. Dan Klumpner?
Yeah, Dan.
Okay.
A couple of responses there. First of all, in terms of total parking demand, there has been a study commissioned. It's been submitted. And in the aggregate, it indicates that there's plenty of parking to satisfy the code requirements. The broader issue for the community and for the city is what about long term? And the city is expanding that study. So as there is incremental development behind here, that the future parking needs can be anticipated. With respect to the relationship between parking and facility, the intent is that the students would not be in the parking facility that's immediately adjacent, the Performing Arts Center, that would, in fact, be public. It affords the city perhaps the opportunity to utilize some parking that's now currently underutilized, and it makes the parking closer to the Confluence Center more available for the public. The way that that's controlled, not only through the permitting process at the university, but by pricing policy, and that ultimately will direct and dictate to a large extent how the parking is used on a practical basis.
But Dan, why isn't the public parking garage under what's going to be used for the public theater? For that part, you know, when the public is there, why wouldn't a public parking garage go where the public is going? I don't know any. I'm not going down. I'm not going to be staying in your dormitory, Mike. I'm going to be a patron of the arts going to the theater, and I want to park under that theater.
All right, Penny, thank you very much. Let's get some answers here.
The parking facility will be within 50 or 75 yards of the Performing Arts Center. It's about as convenient as you can make, given the geometry and the physical characteristics of the site.
And listeners, you can call in with your questions for either Dan Klumpner or Mike Rindo about the Eau Claire Confluence Project. The number is 800-228-5615, and you can also post on the West Side Facebook page. I haven't seen any come in quite yet, but we do have lines open and plenty of space on our wall on the West Side Facebook page. Next caller is Steve in Eau Claire, and Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I have a question for Mr. Rindo. I tried to get a hold of David Miller in Madison, but he was in a board meeting, so I'll direct my question to Mike Rindle. The backstopping of the parts or the project by the city, is that a requirement by the university, by the state, or is that just something that the Board of Regents would like to have?
For those of you who the caller referenced David Miller, who is the Associate Vice President for Capital Planning and Budget at UW System, and he's one of the people that we're working closely with on this project. In answer to the question, the Board of Regents unanimously passed a resolution in October at their meeting that was held at UW Stout in support of the concepts of the Confluence project, and they talked a lot about how they liked the project because of the collaborative nature of it between the private sector and the public sector and the various government agencies that are working together on this. In terms of that resolution, one of the guiding principles, and there were several, but one of the guiding principles was that there be an independent guarantor of the non-university operating expenses for the Confluence project. They did not direct who that should be, nor has there been any decision about who that should be. They simply said in their guiding principles that in order for the state to commit the $25 million toward the community arts center and the dedicated university space, that there needed to be an independent guarantor for non-university operating expense. And it would really be for the operating expense that would be for the Arts Center only, and we're looking at operating models about how the revenues are going to be able to cover all of those operating expenses. So it would be for a fraction on occasion, as we're envisioning it, in case there were a bad year for the Community Arts Center, which happens from time to time, that there be that independent guarantor.
So that doesn't necessarily have to be a municipality like a city. That could be private people that do that, or a private developer, correct?
Probably not a private developer, but if there were a private backer of the Confluence Center that had the financial capability to be able to do that, yes, that would be something I would think would be acceptable to the Regents.
So when you say the Board of Regents made that resolution, then does that in turn make that a requirement of the state, or does that just make that's something that the Board of Regents would like to have?
Well, the way the process works is that this would first have to be approved by the Board of Regents as a UW system capital project. And so the Regents are saying it is a requirement, because it's one of the guiding principles that must be met in order for the Regents to approve the funding for the Community Arts Center share that the state ultimately would be paying for.
Okay, and then that one last quick question. I didn't catch your answer to the first caller. Why does that parking garage have to go under the dormitory? You never really answered that. You just kind of skirted, not you, Mike, but the other guy just kind of skirted around that. Why can't it go under the theater part?
Well, I think, and Dan can elaborate on this, but the parking structure would not only serve the Arts Center, but it would also serve the retail and commercial space that would be on the first floor of the mixed-use development. The residence hall is above that, and so it would allow both patron parking for those who would be going to those businesses and then also parking for the patrons of the Arts Center. So it would really serve both of those buildings.
Okay, thank you for answering my questions.
Thanks for the call, yep. Steve. We really appreciate it. Dan Klempner?
Just one thing to add there. I think the question about the financial backstop, the looking at a lot of ways that that risk can be mitigated. But the most important thing and the fundamental premise of this project is that neither the state nor the community nor the developer, in fact, will build any more than we can sustain. And we're anxiously waiting for an operating model that'll demonstrate the viability and the ability to sustain operations, but that ultimately that everybody's going to have confidence in that model, and that's the ultimate risk mitigation.
And on the ability to sustain, I've been to the State Theater a few times, and it wasn't for any large, really nationally known artists, but there was a lot of open seats. So how do you know that you will be able to, or that the community will be able to fully utilize something as large as a 1,200 seat theater and then some? Has there been any studies done, Dan Klempner?
There's a study in progress, and it's the study that everybody's been waiting for, as are we. But some of the expectations of that study are that in terms of event days, most of what the study is going to rely on are already existing events in the community. There is some essentially new business component, but the model won't rely on that, as we understand. The other thing that's, I think, important is we talk about the size of a 1,200 square foot facility.
1,200 seat.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, 1,200 seat venue. And what we're hearing is that a larger venue wouldn't really attract that many more larger shows. It helps you amortize the cost of a particular show over more seats, but it wouldn't necessarily bring different types of entertainment to the marketplace. But the interesting thing is all of the demand, or the majority of the demand, is really for the 450-seat theater. Mm. That's the one that that some of the consultants and some of the local arts organizations are saying, you know, we're really better off rather than having major events that people attend occasionally at a fairly high ticket price. What we really need to establish is a culture of entertainment where people will go and see multiple events and performances at a modest price and make it part of the a bigger part of the culture and build the community that way.
In a more intimate kind of a setting is what I would...
And Dan alluded to this earlier about the principles would be to construct the facility in a way that maximizes flexibility. So, for example, in this 1,200-seat theater, which we also say, based on some of the market demand we're getting, may could even increase to 1,500 seats. But you could have, for example, just as a hypothetical, 600 seats on the main floor, then a 400-seat balcony above that, and a 200-seat balcony above that. And you could close off those areas so you could just use the 600-seat main floor.
Sure.
So that's the kind of flexibility the State Theater does not currently have. You've got that rather long and narrow house, and you can't segment that off. And so we would really be looking to maximize the flexibility in order to be able to maximize the kinds of performances that could come in. And as Dan said, we really want to have a lot of opportunities to go there rather than just one or two major type events a year.
And as far as prices, I mean, who will be in control of setting the prices or fees or whatever for people attending a show at one of these theaters located in the arts and the arts center part of this? And how will you be able to keep it competitive with what prices are now for, say, a State Theater show, a local show that might be $15 or $30, something like that? Mike Rindo.
Well, the university, for the programming that it would do there, would control the ticket prices. And then the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, which sets its prices for the various shows it brings in, would do the same.
But there wouldn't be any pressure, since it's a new facility, we've got to pay the mortgage or whatever, for these prices to increase?
Well, I think that the reality is that Eau Claire is a very inexpensive place for entertainment right now. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is, people who go to those kinds of events in similar sized cities pay something more than what we're typically used to in Eau Claire. And if you've got a new facility that has a better experience there, I think logically it would follow that there would be a higher charge to attend those kinds of events.
We're talking about the Eau Claire Confluence Project that was announced earlier this year and has been picking up steam quite a bit. We're waiting to hear from the UW Regents. We're going to get to that in just a bit, about whether they are going to throw in some change or how much they really are behind this program or this project. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call at 800-228-5615. You can let us know what you think of the project. Have you got any concerns? Just let us know. We'd like you to be in on this this talk. 800-228-5615. We're going to go to Stanley now, and Gene is calling from Stanley. Gene, thanks so much for calling in. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions.
Okay.
One is, what are you going to do about the flooding? I can remember when I was in college several years ago that whole parking lot was underwater, and the farmer's store basement was all flooded. And due to the fact this is a floodplain, how come you are allowed to build in the floodplain and other people cannot build homes in a floodplain?
All right. Sounds like a development question, Dan Klumpner.
I'm not an expert on floodplain, but we have met with the DNR, and I understand generally, I think, what the requirements are. we don't get any special consideration here. The statutes allow a process of filling the site, having it certified to be out of the floodplain, and then constructing the improvements. So there is a process to go through, as there is in anything else, and we'll be following that process. But to the best of my knowledge, we're not asking for any special dispensation in that regard.
All right. Thanks, Gene, for the call. And we're going to have to talk about funding. It's a necessary evil, I guess, with any project, and there is a lot of funding that needs to happen and a lot of pieces that need to fall into place before before any of this can happen. One of them is funding. I've seen different media reports on the Confluence project, and the cost seems to be around $88 million. Is that still the case, Mike Rindo, or pretty much?
That's where we are right now, yes.
Okay. And we're waiting to hear from the UW Board of Regents, and we're waiting to hear whether or not they would contribute some money to the project. Is this what would they be responsible for? And let's get a quick breakdown of how this thing would get paid for.
So I'll let Dan talk about the overall funding formula, but let me say what the university through the Regents and the state of Wisconsin is requesting. And that is $25 million toward the Community Arts Center for both dedicated university space. And what we mean by that is classroom space, rehearsal space, laboratory space that would be used for our academic programs in the arts, both in the fine arts and the performing arts. And it would replace primarily Care Theater on campus, but would also have some fine arts areas for especially three-dimensional fine arts that currently have inadequate facilities in our fine arts facility. And then the residence hall would be approximately $30 million, and that would be funded through the rent that is paid by students, just like all of our residence halls on campus. The $25 million would be money that is funded through general purpose revenue, which is state tax dollars. So one is tax dollars for the Community Arts Center and the dedicated space, and the other is the $30 million for the program revenue that would be for the residence hall space.
All right. When do we expect to hear whether or not we'll get the actual thumbs up from the Regents? I mean, I thought it was supposed to happen maybe this month they were going to talk about it, but it was delayed. Is there any idea?
Well, it was never really delayed. We got the resolution of support in October, and the earliest then we could have gone back to the Regents would have been in December. But this is a very complicated project, mm-hmm. and it's got a lot of various funding sources, as we talked about a little bit here, and Dan can fill in the blanks on the remainder of the funding sources. The answer is we will go back to the Regents once we have all of the information that is needed to provide answers to the questions that they have and the guiding principles that they have established for us. And we are not seeking funding to be available through the state until the 2015-17 biennial budget. Okay. So we do have time to be able to get all of those answers and make sure that we have a full understanding of both the capital costs and the operating costs, because we don't want to go to the Regents or any other governing body with those specifics without having them very well nailed down.
And some of this information that they're seeking is coming out in this report that we've been alluding to a little bit. And when are we expecting to get a hold of that, Dan Klumpner?
The report is going to focus primarily on operational issues.
Okay.
Frankly, it's waiting right now for some just reaction from some of the key stakeholders as to whether or not the assumptions that they've made in the report are valid, and we're in the process of generating that response for Venue Works, who's preparing that report. I think more importantly, when we talk about capital costs, though, it's important that people understand where we are in the process. We're extraordinarily early. We're in the process of trying to retain an architect for the work. We're working through some state processes to make sure that we have the authority and the ability to hire an architect. We really need that to formalize and finalize programming, and then subsequent to that, put reasonable costs on these various elements. So everybody wants to see that funding model, But the fact is we need to recognize that we're very early in that process and we're dealing with cost assumptions that are very, very preliminary. But in terms then of in addition to state support, there's a new market tax credit component that we think is available for the Community Arts Center. There's a we're having some discussions with Eau Claire County about their potential involvement. We're having some discussions about with the city about their potential involvement with infrastructure and some other related purposes. And then philanthropy is going to be a big piece of this. And this is a community facility, and we're going to need the community to step forward.
And one of the strong points that has been mentioned before of this project is that there are so many players, so many partners. Does that also raise, you know, some unique challenges for a project like this?
It's the blessing and the curse.
Yeah.
The collaboration is, in fact, what makes the project work. And you can look at these models in different communities and find performance venues that don't work. The utilization just doesn't match up very well with the expense structure. The unique thing here is that we have multiple users and shared expenses. That is the unique advantage. That's why this is so different, for example, from the Overture Center in Madison, which is struggling, as mm-hmm. we all hear. But the fact that we have collaboration and that's what makes this work, it also just introduces incredible amounts of processes and interests and people that have to have a role. And the good thing is that we've encountered nothing but people that want to find ways to make things happen. There are always people that want to find a way to see that they don't. But at this point, we've just had really good support.
And Mike Rindo, one of the philanthropic on the philanthropic side, we're talking about the UW-Eau Claire Foundation. They're going to be involved with the fundraising on this. Do we have any updates on that, or has that just begun in earnest?
Well, as Dan said, it really is a community fundraising process, and the foundation is lending its support because it has infrastructure in place that enables it to reach a lot of different kinds of donors, not only community donors, but also our alumni mm-hmm. that are in Wisconsin and the Midwest and throughout the country. So the UW-Eau Claire Foundation is supporting the fundraising efforts. But it really is a community effort that's going to need to come together to raise all of the money necessary to do that.
All right. We'll take our final break here on the west side. We're talking about the Eau Claire Confluence Project. We've got Mike Rindo of UW-Eau Claire and Dan Klumpner with Commonweal Development, two of the major players pushing for this Confluence Project. And then after the break, we're going to introduce Patrick Kurtenbach of the Eau Claire Historical Preservation Foundation, who has some reservations about the way that the downtown may change. So stay tuned. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio station 88.3 WHWC-FM, Menominee, Eau Claire. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking about the Eau Claire Confluence Project. It was announced this spring, and it basically includes two buildings, one that would house a variety of space and theaters for arts and events, galleries, etc. Then there's also a component, another building with some student housing involved and some commercial retail space. It's a big project. $88 million is the proposed or expected cost at this point. At the early stages so far for building the capital for the project, but a lot of people on board and a lot of people excited about it, but there are some that have reservations. Now I'd like to welcome Patrick Kurtenbach. He's a board member with the Eau Claire Historical Preservation Foundation here in Eau Claire. And Patrick Kurtenbach, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you very much for having me on the air, and then also for the Eau Claire Historic Preservation Foundation to have their say.
Hey, our pleasure, and we do intend to get all sides here. And what's the major contention among the Historical Preservation Foundation. I mean, some may know about it through the media reports, but if they don't, could you sum it up? What is the concern here?
For the Eau Claire Historic Preservation Foundation, they are an advocacy entity, and their concern has to deal with the Confluence Commercial National Historic District. It's of 14 buildings, and with the Option A plan of the Haymarket Concepts LLC Development Group, they're talking of removing 7 of those 14 buildings, and those 7 buildings are along the west side of South Barstow.
All right. And since it's a National Historic, there's at least one building, I believe it's the Klein's building, that is by itself a historic landmark type of building. Does that mean there is any legal aspects standing in the way for them to bring these buildings down, Patrick Kurtenbach?
Well, in regards to, again, the Confluence Commercial National Historic District, of the 7 buildings in Option A of the Haymarket Concepts LLC Development Group's plan, I'm only mentioning Option A because of the fact with Option B, none of those buildings are affected, but of those 7, again, on the west side of South Barstow Street, they are all considered contributing to the National Historic District, and one has an over and above designation, a individual designation, and that is the Klein Building.
All right. So, Mike Rindo, what kind of a challenge does that pose to the project? And Patrick is mentioning Plan A and Plan B. We'll get into that in a little bit. But what kind of procedures need to happen on your side of things to mitigate that the concern and whatever might be standing in the way?
Well, there's a process in place to incorporate those kinds of structures into a new development, and I'm not an expert on it. In fact, Patrick would know much more about that process. But as the process unfolds, it will be followed, and that's the intent of all of the parties involved in the development.
All right. And what about the Plan B? I haven't really heard much about the Plan B. What would that include, Dan Klempner?
There is an opportunity to build a lesser project as Patrick mentioned, without using the Barstow Street. The consensus of our group, and in fact the Landmarks Commission, was that it is a better plan to expand to Barstow. It allows us to provide some linkage with the Riverwalk and the bike trail up to Barstow. It provides a nice definition for the redevelopment district, starting at Barstow and continuing westerly and southerly along the riverfront. But perhaps most importantly, we had a structural analysis done, and it just indicated that the scope of the challenges and the ultimate cost associating with repurposes of those buildings just isn't realistic. The existing owner of 5 or 6 of those buildings indicated, in fact, that based on what he'd learned in that process, that he couldn't find any way that he would repurpose them. So the consensus amongst some of us is that for them to stay as they are doesn't do much for either revitalization or the downtown, and to repurpose them is highly unlikely.
Patrick Kurtenbach, what's the response to that? And I've even got another question I've got for you, is that I had seen at least, I think it was maybe the ECRAC website, but I've seen mentions to this part of the downtown being a blighted area. What if those buildings can't be repurposed, if it wouldn't be economically feasible? I mean, would you rather they just stand there and be historic until they kind of crumbled, or what is your response to that?
The response to that is that I'm also a commissioner on landmarks, and I was at the meeting of the presentation by Haymarket Concepts LLC Development Group in regards to the structural feasibility and the adaptive reuse of them. For that to occur, you need to have HSRs completed on the structures. Those are historic structure reports, and that has to deal with individuals that are qualified to do that, such as Miller Dunwoody Architecture out of the Twin Cities, which was involved in the Mabel Painter and Menominee adaptive reuse of that structure. And once you have HSRs, again, historic structure reports, to determine if it's economically feasible for death or use of the structures, again, older buildings, 18th, 19th centuries up to current standards, then you can make that determination. Until then, going into a building and looking at it and not having any kind of extensive surveying done of them for what you want to use them for, you really aren't, you know, going to be up to speed if you can do that or not. Then, of course, you need to deal with the state of Wisconsin historic tax credits, and there's also then the federal government tax incentives. And beyond all of that, you can also then contact Wisconsin Historical Society, WHS, who, because of the historic preservation statutes for the, again, state of Wisconsin, makes the final determination for a National Historic District. Again, it is the Confluence Commercial National Historic District. It's not a local historic district. So eventually they are going to need to be formally notified so that they can start their process that Mr. Rindo mentioned. They have 30 days to respond, meaning WHS, Wisconsin Historical Society. But if they respond, if they do respond and they determine that the current Confluence Project proposal of option A of removing the buildings is considered an adverse effect on any of the buildings or all the buildings, then they can enter into a mandatory negotiation phase. That phase is not a timed event. Again, their response, once a formal presentation is made, is 30 days. After that, it can last as long as it lasts.
All right. And at what point in the project, either Dan Klempner or Mike Rindo, would you be willing or able to contact the Historical Society? Because at this point, everything's kind of fluid. I mean, the plan is there. But at how much more time or study would be needed on your part to reach out to the WHS?
We've had discussions both with the Historical Society and some people in UW systems about that process, and we're proceeding in that regard. We're still waiting for a little better definition of what needs to be in that report and examining some alternatives as to how we best submit it. But we're moving forward. We've got, I don't know, 60-some processes that we're kind of following simultaneously here, and this is one of them, and we'll take it, we'll treat it with diligence and respect, and I can't give you a date when that report's being submitted, but we're working with
it. You're aware of it, yes. And you're working towards it.
Yeah.
I'll go to the phones for the final caller of the evening. We're getting close to the top of the hour, but we appreciate everyone chiming in on this important discussion for Eau Claire and for the region, really. Now we're going to go to Eau Claire, and we've got John on the line. John, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay, thank you for taking the call. And I guess this would be more for Mike Rindo. Since it doesn't make any sense to put a dormitory in downtown Eau Claire, and there are so many citizens of Eau Claire that are against putting it there, how do you justify pushing the dorm onto the Eau Claire citizens and in the process destroy some of Eau Claire's heritage, especially when the buildings have not been analyzed by an outside specialist in historic building restorations?
All right, John, thank you very much. Mike Rindo.
The university is part of its facilities master plan, 20-year facilities master plan, did a comprehensive housing demand study to find out what our current capacity is and what the demand for university housing is. And what we found is that we're currently at 108% capacity. And what that means is all of our rooms are filled, as well as the study halls in the residence halls and any kind of space that's been repurposed. In addition to that, we have again this year, as we have had for decades, students housed in a local hotel, about 146 students housed there. So overall, we have about a capacity of about 4,000 on our campus. The housing demand study said there's demand for up to 4,700 students who are interested in having university-owned and operated housing. And as part of the housing project that we did with the master plan, we looked at a number of alternatives, including constructing new residence halls on campus, which we actually are going forward with a project, and it's been approved by the regents for 2013-15. And then also a residence hall in close proximity to campus that would not have been constructed on university land. And that is the Confluence Project. That's the result of those studies. And the caveat was is that the housing needed to be in close proximity to the university and needed to be apartment style. So it actually would be apartments where students would have individual rooms and then shared living spaces and kitchens.
All right. We are getting very close to the top of the hour, and I guess I want to go back to the historical side of things. I mean, Patrick Kurtenbach, other than citing the way that you see things needing to be happening with the statute and with the Historical Society, with the national registration or recognition, would there ever be any kind of legal challenge waged by the group or by others, do you think?
As far as, again, with the Confluence Commercial National Historic District, the regulatory agency for the National Historic District in the state of Wisconsin is WHS, Wisconsin Historical Society.
Okay.
And again, if they are formally notified by, again, Haymarket Concepts LLC Development Group, they then have 30 days to respond.
All right.
If they then, at that point, deem that there is going to be adverse effect on any or all the buildings, then they will then say mandatory negotiation entering of that phase. Again, that phase is not a timed event, and they can go anywhere from letting the project that's proposed proceed to the other extent of not being able to use those buildings in that project.
All right, Patrick.
And it's up to them to decide, because that's what they do.
And they will do that, and we'll see a lot of developments coming up recently with this report coming out. Also, eyes to the regents to see what happens there. I want to thank my guests, Patrick Kurtenbach, Dan Klumpner, Mike Rindo. You guys helped out a lot with myself understanding the project, and I hope helped the listeners at home as well. Thanks for the calls, and that pretty much does it for the West Side look at the Eau Claire Confluence Project. Next week, we're going to be talking about the resurgence of railroads in our neck of the woods, thanks to frac sand. This is the West Side.